Well, you could say there are children of the revolution all over the Arab world right now. Protests not just in Egypt and Tunisia, but in Yemen and Syria and Tunis there. We're going to talk today about revolution and how we grapple with it as we're watching it unfold. And here today we've got our friend Patrick Henry Bass, senior editor at Essence Magazine, with his favorite revolutionary books. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Sebastian.
And it sounds
John.
Like we're starting with your favorite. I mean, we were going to start by talking about David Walker's Appeal, written in the 20s.
Written in the 1820s. It's African American History Month, and we're on Varick Street, and David Walker wrote much of David Walker's Appeal. The full title is David Walker's Appeal and Four Articles to the Colored Citizens of the World, and very expressly to those in the United States. 76 pages, well before Harriet Beecher Stowe, well before John Brown. This was considered the most dangerous document in America at the time. David Walker was a free slave,
right,
who started much of David Walker's Appeal in the Freedom's Journal, which was the first African-American newspaper, which was edited here on Varick Street. And he openly, unabashedly challenged our nation's leaders, and he challenged free slaves not to revolt but to reconsider their status in the country. Sure. And it galvanized free blacks and galvanized white abolitionists.
And I think one of the interesting connections between this David Walker's Appeal, written in the 1800s, and the Egyptian protesters today is he also wanted no compromise or negotiations. He wanted complete emancipation. Forget it, and I'm not going anywhere until I get it. That's what we're hearing out of Egypt.
Exactly. David Walker was such an enemy of the state at the time. There was a $3,000 bounty on his head, which would be $3 trillion today, and $10,000. It was a $10,000 bounty if he could be found. He became a martyr because he died mysteriously in 1830 at about 56 years old. Some people think that he was poisoned, but actually he died from tuberculosis. So that only added to his mythology. And so when people go back, and you can still get David Walker's Appeal, it's still quite popular. And when people go back and read it, you're astounded not only by the richness of the writing, but also the ideas that he was moving forward.
And this is the literature of the source materials, the manifestos of a revolution. The battle cries.
He clearly separated himself from William Lloyd Garrison. I mean, he was an evangelical
abolitionist.
And so John Brown would take up the mantle of David Walker.
All right. So also fitting into this sort of personal manifesto genre is the Motorcycle Diaries, of course, which many people read in terms of understanding not just a revolution, but revolutionaries.
And how revolutionaries are formed. Che Guevara is a very, very controversial figure. And the Motorcycle Diaries, a lot of people, you know, of course, are thinking of the film, Miguel Garcia. But this was written in the early 1950s when he was traveling with Alberto Granado throughout a lot of Latin America. And so you're getting to see how his ideas were born. And so
his motivation to actually confront authority.
Correct. But what's exciting about the Motorcycle Diaries is this is one of the more recent revolutionary tracks that is appealing to younger people.
Right.
So not only in Latin America, but when young people in college with the Che T-shirts.
Yeah.
So now it's become about, you know, cool to follow Che.
Right,
so, you know, someone is not going to read Dickens or Upton Sinclair or David Walker. They're going to go check out Che.
Well, everybody's got to have a favorite here. I mean, people have to have their own revolutionary texts that are of interest to them. And we should encourage people to give them to us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org where your selections are all going to be, right?
Exactly. And Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. I mean, we all read that in high school.
Well, now we're moving into fiction. You have four novels on your list. This is one of them, Upton Sinclair, The Jungle, which we'll talk about really quickly, and then three others. And then let's move into how fiction helps us understand revolution.
Right, well, Upton Sinclair, a lot, you know, he inspired novelists like Hemingway and Steinbeck, and he wrote 80 novels in his lifetime. He lived to be 90 years old. Ran for governor of California in 1934. Everyone considered him the progressive's progressive. Many people don't consider The Jungle a novel. You know, like when people go back and look at it, because it led to the Pure Food Reform Act, fast food nation that, okay?
Yeah,
so
when
people look at him, they critique him as a novelist because he was so political,
didactic,
so polemical, didactic in his writing. So when you go back and look at The Jungle, there are parts of it, I know, John, you may take umbrage with this, that are Dickensian. Some of the passages that passages that he writes. But because of his political beliefs, and he was all over the place as a progressive.
You certainly can't argue with how efficient
it was. The power of it. And the power of revolution to create reform is what he did.
Well, and that also works for these other three novels that you have on your list. You've got The Unbearable Lightness of Being. Not My Child.
Yeah.
And, of course, Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. These are three other novels, fiction,
right,
that you think inspired revolution.
Yeah. Their Eyes Were Watching God, particularly because, you know, that was a novel that had gone out of print. And when it was brought back into print, it had sort of galvanized an underground movement among black women on college campuses. So at the height of the Black Power movement and the women's movement, no one was hearing from African-American women. And African-American mm-hmm. women didn't have a heroine that they could go to. And they found themselves connecting with the character Janie and Their Eyes Were Watching God and became, you know, immersed in Zora Neale Hurston's writing. One of those people would be Alice Walker, who would then go and try to find Zora Neale Hurston's
author of The
Color Purple. And she was a student at Sarah Lawrence College. And so that's an unrecorded, undocumented part of American history and also of revolution, that young black women, you know, in the late 60s and early 70s, with Zora Neale Hurston, well before Angela Davis and the Free Angela movement, Zora Neale Hurston was that black woman who black women, galvanized around.
Books
and supported.
Are the beginning, are the seeds. And you've got Tale of Two Cities, French Revolution. You've got
yes.
10 Days That Shook the World, the Russian Revolution,
right,
which you can talk about.
And Weep Not, Googie Wathiongo's Weep Not Child. I mean, that on the Mau Mau Revolution, I mean, he was exiled. And in many ways, his writing has improved since Weep Not Child. But that novel still...
That was his first.
Overshadowed some of his great writing, like Wizard of the Crow, which
was just released. And I should mention, he was in exile from Kenya. This whole list can be found at thetakeaway.org. But Patrick, it sounds to me like you're suggesting books that make us understand the people who are in parts of revolutions that will help us actually grapple with the larger implications.
At the heart of these works, it's all emotion. When emotion and intellect meet, powerful things happen.
Perfect sentiments there. You can see all of Patrick's revolutionary books at thetakeaway.org. You can add your own list. We definitely want to hear what books influence you when you're trying to grapple with the impact of revolution, either psychologically or in historical terms. Patrick Henry Bass, senior editor for Essence Magazine. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
And that conversation is to try and help you understand the political revolution that's going on in the Arab world. You can also listen to our podcast, Wave of Change. You'll get special podcast-only interviews with reporters, protests, all of the very latest from the Middle East. You can subscribe to it by heading over to thetakeaway.org or get it on iTunes.
I'm John Huckenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.